Welcome to Table Talk. We invite you to pull up a chair and have a seat at the table as today we talk about, of all people, Michael Jackson.
Good grief, Scott.
I know this is a first for us, Brent, but we're not alone here today. We have a very special guest who's going to be joining us, and we'll let him do most of the talking. But first of all, let me introduce him to you. He's David Zoll. David grew up in New York City and also spent a period of time in Germany as his father was doing some PhD work. He attended college at Georgetown University. He then worked as a youth minister for FOCUS, which is Fellowship of Christians in Universities and Schools. And then in 2007, he left FOCUS, was married, and moved back to the New York City area. And then he started Mockingbird Ministries. And this is how he identifies that. We are a lay parachurch ministry that seeks to connect the Christian message with everyday life with a special emphasis on reaching young adults. The founders of this ministry are all Anglican, and David has this description. We all share a common commitment to Luther's law gospel paradigm and the truths outlined in the Heidelberg Disputation. We also like to call ourselves Anglo-Lutherans or Cranmerian Lutherans. All the listeners will know exactly what you mean by that, David.
In other words, these are Anglicans that are Luther sympathizers. Would that be right, David?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, David, welcome to Table Talk. Glad to have you here today to speak about what some people might think is a very odd topic for Table Talk, Michael Jackson. We came across a sermon for Michael Jackson that you had put together, and I think that maybe will form the outline for our discussion today. First of all, what was the impetus for this? What's the connection with Michael Jackson for you?
Well, guys, by the way, thank you for having me on. This is a great opportunity. Michael Jackson has been someone that I've been fascinated by for a long time. I think as someone who is a Lutheran sympathizer.
Don't be shy now.
Yeah, as someone who's an out-and-out law gospel Lutheran, I find that I'm attracted to people who are, I don't know, maybe see things in extremes or are willing to take things to their logical conclusion. And Michael Jackson, oddly enough, I see as someone that's like that. And I've also always loved his music. I grew up at a time when it was in the 80s when it was very impressionable. But as I got older and was listening to his music and watching it, the whole drama unfold, I just developed a real compassion for the man and in light of my theological understandings.
And so as you watched, as some have referred to it as Michael's journey, you did so with a theological insight there and saw that by looking at Michael, we could learn something about ourselves and even something about who God is?
Yes, I mean, that's as ridiculous as that may sound. That is exactly what I think. I think that you can look at Michael and just see him as a freak show, which there's, and you would have some, certainly some foundation to stand upon, but if you look at him as a person who is dealing with impulses and desires and the fallenness of the world and of his own life, and the same impulses and desires that a lot of us deal with, you know, I always like to say that if Christianity really is true, if the gospel claims are true, then they've got to account for someone like Michael Jackson. So I see it written all over his life story. I would say, first and foremost, he was a man who, in no uncertain terms, his whole adult life was about recapturing his childhood and kind of reconciling. As I say in that sermon, reconciliation was the first big point. And he did not feel any sense of... He felt a huge amount of unrest and lack of peace about the way he was brought up. In fact, that he would always say that he didn't have a childhood. He was robbed of a childhood, that he was on the Motown hamster wheel during that time. He was just working 14 hours a day, no birthdays, no, because there's a Jehovah's Witness, they didn't celebrate Christmas. But he didn't go to school. He would always talk about looking at other children and seeing them playing. So his adult life was in an attempt to reconcile and to restore harmony, as it were, with the sins of the past.
So David, you just briefly mentioned that Michael grew up Jehovah's Witness. And so that's the connection with no birthdays, no Christmases. Is that
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. I don't have that in depth of an understanding of Jehovah's Witness theology, but I do know that they don't believe in celebrating Christmas.
Oh yeah, that's correct. And no birthdays. I remember growing up in Wyoming, there was a Jehovah's Witness classmate of mine, and of course she could not participate in any of the class parties that celebrated any holidays or any birthdays. What a horrible way to live. It really was. You could just see it in her. But this was part of his background, wasn't it?
A big part of his background. His mother was a devout Jehovah's Witness, and his father, of course, was just a philanderer and kind of a bit of a despicable guy. I don't think it's a stretch, but to say that. But yeah, he when, as he grew older, and of course with him, it's the irony is that that work, that effort, that the fruit of those years was this enormous amount of fame and resources and means that he could then go back and try to reclaim it. So, you know, the very thing that robbed him of his childhood was the thing that also enabled him to try to reconcile it, which is ironic and kind of sad.
David, you use the language to define reconciliation as restoring harmony. And as I'm listening to you, Michael did not have the childhood that a normal person would have, and we might even say didn't have a childhood according to God's design for children. And so his adult life was his own attempts to redeem that or to restore that which was lost.
Absolutely. I think what you have in Michael is someone who, he's almost the chief, he's an incredible example of an affront to the first commandment, of an attempt to be your own God, to play God with yourself, and to play God with your life. And so everything in his life post-childhood was his own power, his own schedule, his own... control, and he's trying to exercise the sort of authority over himself that only God has, and it's sad. Of course, it ultimately looks like insanity when we try to play God, as Michael's story tells us. But that doesn't make it any less painful to watch.
David, tell us a little bit about Michael Jackson as a child prodigy, and how he just achieved such great star power.
Sure. One thing you mentioned, when you say that God's plan for children is certainly one thing we know, you know, to honor your father and your mother, and what that looks like was inverted in Michael's case, that he was his parents' boss, in fact, and he was the breadwinner for the family starting at age 11, really. And that is, I'd say that's directly inverted from the proper order of things. Sad to say, and that's the case with a lot of child stars. But Michael was so talented and given this sort of, I don't know if you want to say common grace or some sort of, he was given a huge gifting when it came to dancing and singing, that everything came intuitively and instinctually to him, so that he was able to outdance and outperform his older brothers. He was the seventh of nine children. He was able to do that at a very early age, so that it was embarrassing for his other brothers. And, you know, he was able to pick up on dance steps immediately, and then the story goes that they would get beaten, his brothers would get beaten if they didn't do it like Michael, which, of course, bred a lot of contempt and jealousy and loneliness for Michael. And one thing that I'll say, thinking about Michael, the idea of God giving gifts to people that in no way deserve them is written all over his early story, in that he had no training, he had no education, he was coming from a very poor background, yet had this enormous gift that he couldn't account for, almost, that it was, and of course that gifting ended up being a curse for him.
You know, I want to make a comment about that, David. You know, we Lutherans, and when we talk about the small catechism, and in particular with the Apostles' Creed, we talk about first article gifts. When we confess that God has made me in the first article, we also confess that he's given us a lot of other things in our life. And then towards the end, Dr. Luther writes these very telling words. All this he does out of fatherly divine, only out of fatherly divine goodness and mercy, without any merit or worthiness in me. Now, this appears precisely what you're talking about. Michael was given these gifts, and the trouble with his background is that he couldn't recognize properly that he was a creature and that he could give praise and thanks to God for them.
Absolutely. It's very sad that he wasn't able to do that. Because he also was getting so much praise even as a small child that you start to believe that sort of thing. And that you're responsible for it. That it's not a gift from God. That in fact you are somehow better than other people. Or that you are special in a way that sets you apart. And of course, you know, on one level he was set apart. He was better at this sort of thing than his brothers. But there was no. I don't think there was a sense that it was a gift that wasn't really his to boast of. In that sense, and that's very sad because it once you have to take responsibility for that sort of thing, this step towards playing your own God in such a dramatic way as he did is not a very far step.
Okay, so we've talked about Michael trying to reconcile himself with his childhood. Now, David, when it came to, and I remember I was in junior college when all this came out, the Thriller album. And it was huge. All my friends, that's all they listened to. Now, could you tell us some more about how he tries to get back to that? Or did he try, as he got older, try and attempt to get back to this, his life as Thriller gave it?
Absolutely. I mean, rarely do, we believe that no one ever fulfills God's law. And that no one ever, all have fallen short of the glory of God. The world has a different law, which is, you know, just as it can be very, very demanding itself, very judgmental. The law that Michael got when he achieved such astronomical and really unprecedented success with Thriller, I mean, it made him a star on a global level in the sense that really only Elvis or maybe the Beatles had ever been. And it was a time in the 1980s where I think globalization, to use the buzzword, was just really taking off. So Michael reached a pinnacle that not many people had ever reached, and as a result, he would be judged by that both internally and externally for the rest of his life. And it's something that no one could ever reach that again. It was sort of lightning striking, and it was not down to his songwriting or his performance, although those were all stellar. It was an enormous number of factors that really only could be explained in a sort of heavenly sense. But yes, the having that large of an achievement, it's like when you hear Mark Spitz, the great Olympic swimmer, talk about his life post winning all those gold medals in Munich. Everything's sort of downhill and lived in the shadow of that, and that nothing is ever good enough ever again. But Michael was dominated by a desire to reach that or maintain that Thriller standard, that Thriller law, if you will. Mm. And it drove him to, you know, the follow-up to Thriller was bad. He spent three years in the studio. I think it took 4 months to record Thriller. He tried to recreate it, or the paralysis or the perfectionism that it that was the outcome. There's nothing spontaneous about that. It was a long gestation period.
Oh, that's a... Well, go ahead, Scott.
I was going to say, we're going to be coming up on a break here in just a second, but when we come back on the other side, David, maybe we can go in this direction here. In 2 Corinthians 5, we hear that God was reconciling the world to himself in Christ, not counting men's sins against them. And so you have God's reconciliation, and you have a difference with Michael's, and that is Michael's own attempts to reconcile things. So maybe we can talk about that on the other side of the break.